sunny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart.
Happy Valentine's Day. Grab a glass of whatever warms your heart and sit somewhere comfortable. You are about to receive some rare and precious gifts. I'm Susan McCabe, and I'm privileged to host tonight's special on love, lost, found, and everlasting. We are live in VOV's Jean Bosch studio with nine of Vashon's most talented poets and Eureka, our special guest. If you're here for the romantic musing styles of Dickens, Keats, or Shakespeare, well, you might be surprised. As it turns out, love among Vashonians has edges, soft and sharp, and lots of guts. Let's get started. Opening poet Laurie Suzanne Lesson is an award-winning poet and artist who's been living on Vashon for the past 3 years. She is at work on a manuscript of poetry about finding true love in late middle age. Laurie?
Thank you, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone listening. I'm going to start with a poem about the trouble with love. The trouble with love is that it is not what we think it should be. Right when its warm blood fills our bones and we swoon into dreams of a dream come true, a cradle of ancient affection reclaimed, mistakes burned out of our fat anthology, pages and pages of trouble destroyed in a flash of realization that this is love for sisters and children and partners alike, it has come. There is the dread awakening of love's toll, the terror of reality intruding on the reverie of goodness, the rose snipped for its beauty and fragrance, torn from the field of spring's enthralling magic tricks, artifice for man's dull and lifeless think tank, imprisoned against its inanimate will. Commitment to love is love's disagreeable aftertaste, the possibility of loss or of pain, staking a rude claim in our dreams, the need to be bigger than our skin allows, guardian of the thing called love. I am God for this thing. I am overbearing and strong, palms hoarding the sudden blooms of affection that shower down from the dry and quiet skies. This is not what I expected love to be, this commotion within. Now I'm going to read a poem called Under Your Blue Sea. There is a wire inside me in which you sizzle, from my aorta to my fingertips, exquisite tightening, titanic electromagnetism. How did this happen? I carry fire in my palms, a brilliant burning mystery, terror of unnameable attraction. Why do we humans need one another? Why are we pulled together? Are we nothing but electrons and protons sleeping in beds of blood? You are flowing through me like lightning. I'm hungry for your hands to stop the anguish of dreaming, to be water dribbling down my abdomen, to be a lake pooling between my hip bones, to be born again under your blue sea.
Wow.
A moment. Daily, so much pleasure. It's almost unbearable. How stop time to take a breath, to fall to the floor in gratitude? How drink the blue juice of the sky? How lick the bark of Daphne's belly so that she might know that though Apollo is long gone, I have not forgotten her? How remove my heart and hold it in the palms of my hands like a newborn? And watch its red chamber pulse with the music of destiny, then put it back renewed and assured that only breathing matters, and love, with all its divine pleasures. Awareness is almost unbearable. No wonder Moses caught the stutters. No wonder Jesus became an effigy of passivity. No wonder Joan never cried out for her mother, but instead opened her eyes to the blazing fire. Dry leaves are falling down on me as I drink a glass of water, and I am stunned by the quenching pleasure of love and desire.
Thank you, Lori. That was wonderful.
You're welcome.
That was Lori Lesson. And now, Carrie Hunter Davis, like many islanders who builds or renovates homes on Vashon, she is an island poet, and her family spent time away in our wonderful woods, and she was in love with that momentary lifestyle. Carrie?
Thank you, Susan, and welcome to Valentine's Day, everybody. This poem, as Susan mentioned, is a poem about a year we spent in our cabin without power, a year just before my son came. And just so you know, all poems are not nonfiction. I never have liked Chef Boyardee's SpaghettiO. You'll understand it later. The year in the cabin, across the fields we walked, the spring winds had scared most of winter away. The cabin in a copse of woods held on, ice pellets on cedar branches, rain sneering at the door. Always we could hear drills gnawing at our house being remade, the occasional saw redoing our lives, but never over the ravens' jabberings or the new smell of ferns we were learning. That spring we were flowers, bringing our eyes and arms to close as night leaked into the unlit cabin. Petals protecting the pistol, we hunched round the wood stove as if it were God. Winter still lapping away in the darkness, we had to shape with our fingers when finding the bed. For summer, we packed forgetting and one library storybook each on weekly re-entrances to wash clothing, fill kerosene cans. Food came first from our home in boxes we loved. Kraft macaroni, Campbell's chicken noodle, or beef barley, Chef Spaghetti's Boyardee SpaghettiOs, Jiffit's Terrif peanut butter, Carnation cocoa, never-ending noodles, until our mouths were so full we were no longer homesick. Nothing green or gregarious, our garden was gone, so we could love weeds again, and insects, aphids and ants. We trained to crawl on our hands, moths decorating candles. Salmon berries that snuck into dahlia beds, now we gathered. Miner's lettuce, runaway borage, wild onions, watercress, making mahonia jam, nettle soup, huckleberry pies, chamomile tea, sniffing the wildness as we mushed, mashed, dashed, chopped, chipped, boiled, broiled on the wood stove, stuffed with alder branches. Autumn stood up squeaky at first, then dockweed and Queen Anne's lace went to brown. Big leaf maple to russet, wild rose rouged her hips. The sun that sprawled all summer came thickly, and we wondered what to do with the privilege of being here. We could see winter in the hurry of robins, the nakedness of wild hazels, the wood stove we claimed as our best friend. We held our breath when snow blew under the door, glittering beds and chairs. It was time to go to our renewed home, and there, waiting for us, dressed in winter fur, was a baby boy. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, Hunter. You know, you took me right there, and you made me hungry. Our next poet is Margaret Ronconi. Margaret's poetry has appeared in Chrysanthemum and Goose River Anthology and been published in Three Birds Dreaming with two other poets. Her collection of poetry, A Sleeve of Blue, was recently published by Goldfish Press. Her poetry was performed as part of the Pierce College 10-Minute Play Festival and was chosen for Seattle City Council's Wordsworth program. She curated an open mic in Seattle for 10 years, on Vashon Island for 2 years, and was facilitator for a poetry series at Chief Seattle Club. She lives on Vashon Island, where frequent forest walks keep her inspired. Margaret.
Thank you, Susan. And I'm honored to be here with these other poets on our beautiful island. A few words about this poem. I met these two young lovers on a train journey through Spain. I sat with each of them, first Arthur, then Katya. Their stories lie in this poem that I'll read, along with a few embellishments. Katya and Arthur at Sevilla train station. A keyhole of desire is an open bed. They lie in rain, Katya huddled to his heavy frame. They agree to leave in morning, head west to Cadiz. She, a student of photography, he of freight trains, a vagabond's web of survival. They brave open roads of blood oranges, eat nothing. His boots strapped with stories, her nest, her hair, the nest he recollects from childhood. How they clung to the hips of nearby hills, how each desired dust in what it holds, gold, flour, salt, tales of witches who sink to the bottom of the sea. Near the city gates, a pack of boxer dogs. There's a small chance the procession will begin with them. This next poem I'm going to read was written for my daughter and her wife for their wedding day, and I was able to recite it at their wedding. A bouquet of love. Blossoms of love gather in your arms. We listen to bells in your heart ringing wildly. We've come to harvest your bright sunlight and hope. See how our hands join circles of celebration around your boundless desire. Twilight sings her joy. Your love is a house sheltering what is beautiful in this world.
Thank you so much, Margaret. It's so interesting. We're going from passionate sexual love to love of the outdoors and time in building a life to your own life, your love, and your children's love. You're listening to Vashon Poets on Love, Lost, Found, and Everlasting. Claudia Hollander Lucas is our next poet. She is a visual artist, writer, bookmaker, and longtime Islander whose artwork can be found near and far in public and private collections. Visit her website and press called We Live in the Woods for more details. Claudia.
Thank you, Susan, and happy Valentine's Day. Happy V-Day. This good? My first poem is about the love of the sumptuous, featuring an earthen vessel with a pointy bottom, curvaceous hips, and a turned back lip. Amphora. There must be such a thing as a one-word poem, like amphora. Such a lovely sound and shape that filters sediment. Its deep curve of voice, a conical rolling down to its narrow place, like a heaven to quell this dome of a mind, as like that first sip of wine or coffee. Perhaps just another sip, like a smooth whiskey that opens a chest, down, down to toes burrowed in warm sand, a melt of spiral in tone with its curving sound. Amphora. Amphora. Now, don't you want to go strolling on a sail with a gentle friend? Rise up into this canopy of summer fruit heavy and be so bright in song? So to the blue, the golden wicket of sky. Yes, yes. Another slice of cake. Thank you. Muy grazie. Allora.
Lovely. Is there more?
I have one more poem.
All right.
Of a different mood. This poem is about everlasting love, called Witness. Witness another slow death. Appliances, friendships. Now this kitchen bulb, its snug form in its helixed presence, slowly flaring with the gag to then flare again as if to catch its slim breath. A ribboned red, its magenta-like blood pulsing through a strain of blue, on, then off, then on, as I once watched my mother lay there in her holding presence, an approaching stillness that I saw as an end to a life of selflessness and gratitude. Whether a servicing object or parent, how could I leave any sentient being to die alone? So, not daring to turn away as the exhales escaped between longer gaps, yes, the gray slowly claimed her in that corner of our timely universe. And yet more than a light was extinguished in that black holed kitchen.
Mm.
That's it.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Claudia. Now we have a special treat. We have a couple who have come all dressed in pink and brought the product of their love, Eureka. They are Amanda Knox and Chris Robinson. Amanda is an exoneree, journalist, public speaker, author of the New York Times bestselling memoir, Waiting to Be Heard. Between 2007 and 2015, she spent nearly 4 years in an Italian prison and 8 years on trial for a murder she didn't commit. That's material. Christopher Robinson is a Boston University and Hunter College MFA graduate, a McDowell Colony Fellow, Yaddo Fellow, and a Yale Younger Poets Prize finalist. He is the co-author of War of the Encyclopedists, which the New York Times called captivating, and Deliver Us, a four-word Indies Book of the Year finalist. Book of the Year finalist. Together, Amanda and Christopher Robinson co-host the podcast Labyrinths. They have also jointly authored a book of love poems, The Cardio Tesseract. You can find out more about their work at knoxrobinson.com. So I guess we're going to hear some poems from your book of poetry, right?
Absolutely.
That's right.
We're going to go back and forth here, so I'm going to start. Ladies first.
And one note, each of these poems was originated with one of us, but as in the nature of love, I think there's a lot of cross-pollination, and you know, our fingers have been in the pie of every word here, so it's a joint product.
Yeah.
Great. Let's hear it.
The move. You never made the move, you said. You just sat there looking pretty in a corner, and all the girls came to you. But I will never forget how, during that silly ninja flick, your arm found its way around me. How when our hands drifted close, you ventured a curious, no, not curious, fearless finger into the hollow of my palm and stroked my lifeline, my love line, with such powerful restraint I barely felt it. But everywhere, my whole body a quiet fire.
Morning. She is a lolling descent and swirling up, directionless and everywhere, like dust in light. He's a tree branch crashing to the forest floor, suddenly, in the quiet repair days after a storm. Curled against him, she pulls back a few inches to watch him sleeping in the dawn, peaceful as the dawn. When you choose a person thriving and willful, you also choose their particular stillness.
literacy test. Your book decorates my nightstand, and your body decorates my bed. I like to say we weren't sleeping together until after I read it.
Mirror theory. How to love you not as an object, but subject, is no easy feat. Proceeding from the granite fact of your jaw to your chest is an objectifying act. I am not so sure it's possible to love without splintering you or consuming your core. But perhaps the reciprocal thought of you loving me as I love you in the infinite loop of our mirroring eyes approximates a love without shredding, where you never see me, and even at our wedding, I never see you either, for in our minds meeting, we see as each other.
A note on this one, Chris is currently wearing a necklace with two bedazzled owls on them. She wishes for rapper chains. Had I the dopest Cuban link chains, iced out with diamonds and lemonade gold, not some hollowed out dookie rope chains, I'm talking 5 solid kilos of gold, I would hang those chains around your neck. But being rich and not much else but love, let me wrap my arms around your neck, and I will be the pendant of your love.
Mobius gaze. The intergalactic war ended when the Earth's greatest champion looked into the black eyes of the enemy and said, "I see you." Death rakes its legs against its cavernous belly. The two humans in this story looked into their lookers and said, "I see you," and so began their infinite love bomb. Death rattles the metal tube high over Earth's crust in snake-speak warning. They didn't see each other like thieves or patrons, more like ice sees whiskey, like the prune skin of the war vet sees the infant's cry cough. Death counts down to arrest in our post-screw chests. Before it all flamed to ash, our scars were tasted, an argument like a pencil-drawn cyclone carved through our lives. Before it all ended, we took death to the House of Mirrors and smiled.
Wow.
On getting back up. Oh, but how I sometimes envy the dead's determination to stay that way. I wish I were a spring or a skyscraper in an earthquake, swaying because my bones were built to sway. No one should be knocked flat as hard as I have been. But I'm lucky. Not everyone has a reason to rise, my love.
Tick-tock lock. It took me a month to grow accustomed to your smell and the shape of your lips. It took me a year to know that we could last a century. It was a slow, slow day, the day I waited for your call. We built a small but exquisite nest over the summer, and the winter brought our hearts into rhythm. Minute by minute, in our wonky algorithm, we defined our future, a pregnant and solidifying shimmer. But in each solitary second, nothing much passes between us. A momentary glance, a longing for another hour to get work done. Soon enough, a decade will have passed us, offering joint and ache reminders of the precipice we dance on. But with you, the journey to the void will feel like a millennium.
Nothing distance. Have I grown darker? Richer? Or spread light and thin like margarine on a stale cracker? Sometimes I can't hear your voice by choice. I'm listening to the cackling jackals. They make maddening bedfellows. Noise, noise, noise. Cries, cries, cries. You called yourself Cracker the Wise. You made me laugh. I am full of wrath. How can you look at me with such eyes? I am unkind. I know there's only so much time before I must re-engage. I am afraid you will leave me behind. The season you are is in the spring. You are timid when you sing. It's not yours, but my failure to reach all the gifts you offer, all the feeling in the offering.
Metaphor contortions. In the shrinking distance between sky and earth, the plummeting diver is drowning in air. This was supposed to be a metaphor for my commitment to you, but I forgot what it's like to be alone. In all my favorite films, everyone has problems, deadly or hilarious, but also fantastic hair. This was supposed to be a metaphor for the bumps in our road, but now I've stopped peering over fences. At one end of the bell curve, a man doomed to loneliness bonds with an octopus. This was supposed to be a metaphor for us, but then I realized it's Japanese pornography. In the vast, ungraspable ocean, consumers of the dark are content to remain in the dark. This was supposed to be a metaphor for my heart, but my heart is filled with too much light.
And finally, needles. I've always been one to watch the needle going in, to never let anyone catch me by surprise, not again. If I am a witch, then my magic is pain, containing it with a stitch of knowledge, draining it of its power over me, which is considerable. I start to see that thin gleam everywhere in the pitch, but I look to you again and again, and it's never a needle going in. It's your hands cradling a lit match.
Wow.
Thank you.
Great Thanks. Stuff. Thank you, Amanda Knox. Thank you, Chris Robinson. And thank you for listening, folks. You are listening to Voice of Vashon special on Vashon Poets on Love, Lost, Found, and Everlasting at 101.9 FM, KVSH, and on voiceofvashon.org. We're going to take a little musical break now with the guy who's done all kinds of love songs for us. He is Harry Connick.
Had to be you, it had to be you. I wandered around and finally found the somebody who could make me be true, could make me be blue, or even be glad just to be sad thinking of you. Some others I've seen might never be mean, might never be cross or try to be boss, but they wouldn't do, for nobody else gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you, wonderful you. It had to be you.
And it is you. Welcome back to Vashon Poets on Love, Lost, Found, and Everlasting. I'm Susan McCabe, lucky to be your host this afternoon, this evening. I guess it's evening, isn't it? Our next poet is Anne Spires, and I believe, Anne, you are one of our poet laureates. Were you the first?
I was the first.
That's pretty impressive.
They had to chase me down the street. I kept saying no to Ron Irvin.
And who are they? Who decides who the poet laureate is and how?
About two poet laureates ago, we reached out after hearing that other people would like some input. And so we asked for nominations, self or otherwise. We admire people who nominate themselves. And this is a poet laureate where required of you is to wear the label. You don't have to do anything all 2 years except write poems. But many of us have stepped forward with different tasks.
Like Sandra Newell, who decided to curate this show today.
Absolutely.
All right. Anne Spires wrote her first island poems as a new mother down Bunker Trail. She was Vashon's inaugural poet laureate. Her recent poetry books are Rain Violent, Harpoon, and Backcut, available at Vashon Bookshop. As steward of the Vashon Poetry Post, she invites you to pin your poems or favorites of others on the post, which is at the Village Green, correct?
Yes, it's at the Village Green, and sometimes it's naked. And so I invite you to step forward. The pins are on the post.
All right, and would you step forward now and read your poems for
us?
Yes,
ma'am. I'm reading from Backcut, from Black Heron. Backcut from Black Heron Press. The poems in this book are monologues, husband and wife. The poems detail the ocean edge of Washington State immediately after World War II and after the forest Big Cut and the last commercial razor clam digs. In that decade, this husband and wife eked out a living on the dwindling supply of these natural resources. This is a love story. So I will start with the husband. He's looking at her. Husband, Copalis Crossing. One, the banana bread is done when she inserts a straw into its risen dome, and the gesture brings back all the times she yanked the straw out of the kitchen broom, punctured the crust, and loved the clean pullout, me and the warm bread gone. Two. At the table, I tug a fistful of seeds out of the pumpkin. She stands in the open door, watches the rain fill the ditches, and then run the road's long ruts. This is how autumn slips away and how again the rain keeps us inside alone. Three. I say something about the moon rounding for winter. I watch her pose there, looking into the night, ready to close the door. Right then, how her skin glows makes me think of light flowing off the great heron's wings. I open my mouth, the image that lifted me closer to her gone. Four. Connor Creek is bank to bank, and by dark noon, its water runs into the woods, pushing leaf fall, carrying silt. Tree frogs croak. She closes the door. The wood stove tick-ticks, joints expanding, metal swelling. Heat, the curtain stirs, its belly stuck to the sweating window. Five, she says, I saw jellyfish. Her remembering jellyfish lulled to shore where waves lap sharply over cobbles. She cups her hands under one. A colorless moon, its yellow gonads complicate its clear bell. Creatures slipping through her fingers back into the sea. Jellyfish, I say, everything in your hand is like that, slippery, gone. And now from her voice, wife, a lot of man. One, in Seattle after the war, he was small, unfixed, cigarette hanging from his dry bottom lip. A shadow in our boarding house, just mustered out of the 106th Infantry, barbed wire scars fresh on his hands, and drunk on more than victory. Out here, he fills our cabin he built with flotsam, boards reeking of brine, and with rusted nails pulled from sheds collapsed. Out here, he is a gathering storm. His voice cracks, reverbs off sea cliffs. His stories filter through a crowd, lightning sieving through fur. His heat melts the room. Some women hold sour memories, but me, Lord, keep the generous moments. My true love standing when women enter the room. He first with a cup of boiled coffee, proffered from his two hands, warming our pilfered crockery, his hands shaking with use. Two, I dig potatoes, perhaps purple, scabby, small, a cross of Ozette blues and some orphan up Dickey River, roots spread out and out, bumped with spuds. Potatoes all winter, just the size to soften at the first boil. No need for the water to giggle for an hour. Then and watched boil over, burnt starch marking the wood stove. Good ground is hard to find. All this rain, heavy in the clouds, hangs mid-air, condenses on my cheeks. Into the muck, I plant potatoes, eyes blind, skin wrinkled.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Anne. That's Anne Spires, our original poet laureate here on Vashon Island. Our next poet is Jessica Satori. She is a multidimensional creature, a poet, writer, educator, adventurer, and community member. She was raised in a sea of wheat in the Palouse region of eastern Washington and northern Idaho, then migrated west of the mountains to be close to the liquid sea. This is a poem in and of itself. She studied storytelling with screenwriter Stuart Stern, poet Ann Waldman, cinematographers Dan Neese and Ron Vidor, and songwriters Holly Knight and Sue Ennis and Sharon Vaughn. She wrote Synchronicity, The Entrepreneur's Edge, a business decision-making book, and produced 3 poetry chapbooks. I'm a product of Thomas Jefferson's 7th-generation Angle of Repose, Poems of Geology, and came to my dinner party, and the newly released Everything is Written in the Sands of Heaven, from which she will read 3 selections this evening. Jessica.
Thank you, Susan. The first poem is called Everything is Written on the Sands of Heaven. At death, your soul is taken skyward to meet those who have set the table with your nameplate. If you arrive well before dinner, one of the saints you've loved during your lifetime will pour kava into a goblet of golden light and kiss you under both your eyes. Mother Mary will push back the hair from your face, drink deeply of your bare-souled self, and once satisfied, hug you fiercely. After dessert, Jesus will take you, you skittery colt, to the beach drenched with starlight and cool water. And the second one is called Desolation, and that's after 8 friends, close friends died within 6 months' time in 2019. I don't understand everything, but I do know some things that await me. Everything I used to know disappeared. Where was the celebration they promised? I used to laugh. That's when my friends were still on the planet. But it's just me now, holding up the fort. It's just me staring at their photos, some headshots, some headstones. I long to have a long chat with them, tea or beer, it doesn't matter. People who want to be kind tell me that I can talk to them anyway. I know they want to be supportive, but they just don't understand how deep the hole is, and I'm bleeding, and I can't stop this dark flood. I am cynical, jaded, apathetic, remorseful, putrid on a stick, too far gone to be burned over a fire. I used to be able to love, but I gave it up for Lent, Advent II, Eastertide. I take my head out of the sand on the feast days of Mary and those saints that I know care about me. They will teach me to love again. And then the last one is entitled Roy G. Biv, and this has to do with the love of science. And Roy G. Biv is, of course, a mnemonic for the colors of the rainbow.
I wondered what that was.
So how on earth and in heaven did Isaac Newton react when for the first time he saw the sun spill into color in the palm of his hand, spilling to the floor, spreading a transformative act that lit the room and the soul? What on Neptune and on Venus, tearing with the thoughts, creating, being a mere mortal, creating color, did Newton feel when he deftly shoved that bodkin in between his eye and his eye socket to induce the sensation of color? All I can think of is the sensation of pain. What on Saturn and on Jupiter was he reading in his 30 Bibles trying to dissect the voice of God? What colorful words leapt out to give him clues? How can I decipher the rich resonance that drew him in? Barefoot on the grass, gazing at this starlit universe on a Palm Sunday dawn, what would it mean if Isaac could be godlike and make rainbows and covenants? It could mean that we learn from Newton as he learns from us.
Wow. Jessica Satori, thank you very much. You're listening to Vashon Poets on Love, Lost, Found, and Everlasting. We have time for a little more music. And your poem, Jessica, made me think of this. A very wise person once told me that grief is the price of love. And this is a song by Nazareth.
Love.
little bit of truth from Nazareth here on the Voice of Vashon. You're listening to Vashon Poets on Love, Lost, Found, and Everlasting. I'm Susan McCabe, privileged to be here with our nine wonderful Vashon poets. Our final and organizing poet is Sandra Noel, who is also our current poet laureate here on Vashon Island. Thank you, Sandra, so much for bringing up this whole show and bringing all these wonderful people into our studio.
Thank you, Susan. And also, I want to note that Claudia was the one that came up with the idea. I just called a bunch of people.
So. Claudia Hollander. Thank you, Claudia. All right. Sandra works as a freelance illustrator and graphic designer, developing environmental education posters, brochures, and interpretive signs. I'm sure you have all seen them somewhere on the island someday. Her poems have appeared in Pontoon, Buddhist Poetry Review, and others, chapbooks entitled The Gypsy in My Kitchen and Into the Green. I love those titles. Finishing Line Press, The River, Kelsey Press, and Unraveling the Endless Knot, Middle Creek Publishing, and two full-length poetry books, Love Island on the Goldfish Press and Hawkland, Middle Creek Publishing. She is Vashon's current poet laureate. Welcome, Sandra Noel.
Thank you very much, Susan. Thanks, everybody that read tonight. It's just been wonderful and a big lift to my spirits. These poems I'm going to read are a few from several I'd written to my husband, Bill, every Valentine's Day. And he passed away this year. And I never knew he saved them all. He's a scientist type. And kind of the calm in the middle of my storm. And I was going through his papers, and I always figured he just recycled the love poetry over the years. But I found a folder marked The Good Stuff. And in there were all the poems and all the cards I'd given him over the years. So it was a sweet surprise. This first one is called Love in November. We walk together, gathering the coming darkness with both hands. So much has slipped through them already. We hold on to what remains and let go of the rest without much regret. Love was never simple for us, so we must make allowances and time for each other on this rainy evening. The cold air bites down hard and we sigh, remembering our younger selves, when we held each other, hands full of hope. But the long days of summer are over, reminding us both how little time we have, leaning into the fires of winter, glad for a good roof and replaced windows. We are birds of a feather, hunkered down together, which has its contentments in November. And this one made him blush a little when I gave it to him. Your naked thighs evoke a beach on the Sea of Japan, my first real glimpse of you whole out of bed. You were resting on a rock, seal sleek, back from a long swim I was too timid to try. Your thighs taunt from the effort I wanted as now to reach out, but the beach was public, so I just watched, thinking of the possibilities later and perhaps for a lifetime. I could touch them now, wet from your shower, but hesitate. Watch as you step into your jeans. Desire these days is more in the heart than the body. And this one's called Setting Crab Traps on a Windy Morning. He had mentioned something called, oh, we're coming back on a following sea. And I didn't know what that was. And he said, oh, it just means it's calm coming in, again, not coming into the wind. So I decided to write a poem about it. Setting Crab Traps on a Windy Morning. Coming back on a following sea, leaving the white-capped waves off Piner Point behind us. I watch your face, relax now, knowing the trouble has passed, and soon we will reach safe harbor. We are getting old, It's a hard truth. Our bodies do not respond like they once did and look as worn with time. But your eyes, my love, your eyes are still the color of the sea.
Ah, Sandra Noel, thank you so much. I want to thank all of you poets who have been here with us this evening. Lori Lesson, thank you for helping with the recording. Margaret Roncone, Hunter Davis, Chris Robinson and Amanda Knox, Ann Spires, Jessica Satori. Gosh, I hope I didn't miss any of you. Did I miss anybody? And Claudia Hollander. Thank you all. We have a little extra time, and so I have something that I'd like to read that is kind of for all of you, really. I am not a poet. I write essays on Substack under the title Hot Flashes, Cold Showers, in case anybody wants to check it out. This one is called Most Saturdays. Most Saturdays I get up, make the bed, and start the week's laundry while he makes our coffee. It's an unwritten ritual we share in sweet morning harmony. I do my wife thing and he his husband. I'm newish to this wife thing, so I feel as if I'm playing a part, and this Saturday, I awoke to the urge to play writer instead. What that means is that instead of doing laundry, I bound out of bed to my backyard table with a favorite pen and full pad of paper. Well, I don't exactly bound, though, because writing any time is a two-way struggle for me as well as a joy. One is the struggle to give up precious Saturday off moments with the love of my life and our four-legged children. The other is the gut-wrenching struggle to address a blank page and attempt to fill it with the truth. The terror comes in trying to remember an incident, a moment, a place, a feeling in sufficient detail to take my reader there. Where do I go from here? Beauty. Writing about the beauty around me is rare for me since I'm often dumping garbage on the page. Can I write about life and beauty as it is without making a point? Can I write about beauty without describing the feeling it evokes, the fullness it creates within? It just makes me want to paint. Then I notice art created by another and gifted to me in this little yellow coffee cup. The yellow glaze it sports is in shades of sun and daffodils, nearly cream white to the hue of almost ripe bananas, that yellow that sparks next to the spring green on the flower's tip. In periwinkle blue, the artist, my artist now, brushed a whimsical watercolor iris. It's opened its petals in a sweeping breaststroke that swims from the cup's center around two sides to within reach of the handle. And all this is smooth, soft to the touch, warm, round for my lips, and comfortable in my woman's hand. Yes, my artist was a woman, I'm sure. And I fancy she made these strokes with her brush on a sun-dappled morning like this when her heart was stunned by the perfection of that iris in her garden. And she was rendered incapable of anything but to paint this cup. Periwinkle blue against the soft yellow morning sky as only spring can light it. Where was she, and when was it? The glaze on this cup she made to inspire me is cracked with time like an ancient Venetian wall. Perhaps she was there, in Venice, or in Florence, perhaps Tuscany, some place where the heart bursting with the thrill of beauty is never ignored in favor of folding the laundry. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you for listening. And I want to go out with a Whitney Houston song that I hope appeals to everyone.
We'll always love you. Bittersweet memories, that is all I'm taking with me. So goodbye, please don't cry. both know I'm not what you need. And I will always love you. I will always love above all.